We are back on the Bengals Beat podcast. Lindsey Patterson, Charlie Goldsmith, our guy Tyler Dragon. He's taken a few days off, but you have myself and Charlie. Charlie, how you doing?
It's the last day of OTAs. We made it to, I guess, the next milestone in the offseason. So congratulations to us, I guess.
I know. And I know a lot of people, when they think about the NFL, they're like, all it is OTAs, voluntary workouts, mini camp next week. Nothing really matters till you get into training camp, maybe preseason and regular season. But for this team, the biggest storyline has been Joe Burrow. He's participated. He's doing the stretches. He's out there with his team. And he's also putting in some extra work with Ja'Marr Chase. When you've been out there just the last 3 weeks, what were some of your observations, what you've seen from Burrow?
Just my big takeaway has been the progression. I like this observation from Zach Taylor. He mentioned that going into like an OTA, you don't know where the entire team is going to be shape-wise. And he kind of had a similar experience with Joe Burrow too. And as a result, the Bengals have really ramped it up and he has done something new individually in each of these weeks, you know, starting off with just being there and being kind of close to a full participant. And at the end of last week's practice, adding the 40-yard kind of stationary deep ball with Tyler Boyd and T. Higgins. And then this week, there was even fewer strings attached. Just pure 40-yard deep routes, bombs, thrown down the sideline. Like you mentioned, doing extra work. The biggest thing to me was the play action work he was doing. You know, running backs were allowed to get within 5 feet of him, unlike the first week of OTAs. And he just looked like a quarterback being a quarterback during OTAs, and I think that's the most important development.
I think right now when you hear from guys like T. Higgins, C.J. Uzomah last week, they talk about this arm strength, the velocity they're really seeing from Joe Burrow. Is that something? Is his teammates hyping him up, or could that be the biggest strength that obviously was his weakness last year?
I've said this before, but if Joe Burrow hadn't torn his ACL, this would be the entire offseason breaking down Burrow's velocity and his arm strength and talking about him taking the next step. So the fact that we're having this conversation, I think, is a good overall sign in his knee, because he is able to focus on these other things. And, you know, I have nothing to compare to personally with how fast his throws are. You know, I don't know what the media policy is for bringing a radar gun into these OTA practices, but maybe that's something I could look into. It's funny, I spend all my time at Great American Ballpark worrying about velocity, and now I'm having the same experience at Paul Brown Stadium.
Charlie, you're giving fans ideas. By the time training camp gets here, they're going to be on top of that bridge with their radar gun to see what Joe Burrow's doing. I have a feeling this is going to happen. Not giving any ideas, but this could be a possibility going forward into training camp. We'll flip to the defensive side, because I feel like we go so offensive heavy right now. Again, they're OTAs. Nobody's getting hit out there. It's just really routine, voluntary workouts that they're doing at Paul Brown Stadium. Has anything really stood out for you on the defensive side so far?
You know, I like Trey Hendrickson, and it's clear just watching him run around that he brings something that no one else on the defensive line really has, just his combination of power, athleticism, fluidity, agility. You know, Sim Hubbard's a very good defensive end, but obviously Trey Hendrickson has a much different track record as a sack getter and as a pass rusher. And that's impressive. And, you know, talking to Trey, he's noticed, and this is just different from what he was doing in New Orleans. In New Orleans, he was a role player. And in Cincinnati, he knows, he's been able to tell reading the playbook, that his number will be circled a lot in what the Bengals are trying to do defensively.
We're without Tyler Dragon on this podcast right now. It's a little bit shorter this week, but we do have a special guest, one of the best over on NFL Matchup, executive producer and analyst Greg Cosell is going to join us, talk Joe Burrow, offensive line, Ja'Marr Chase, and we'll flip to the defensive side. But before we get to that interview, Charlie, what do you have up on Cincinnati.com?
I have a story up on T. Higgins and his potential to have a breakout season, and just what I've noticed from him coming into the OTAs in much better shape. And on top of that, I have a story on Trey Hendrickson hitting on some of the same points I mentioned.
Make sure you check it out, Cincinnati.com, over on Twitter, ENQ Sports, and the Instagram, ENQ Bengals. This week's BBP Extra NFL Matchup, Greg Cosell joins us next. We are back on the Bengals Beat podcast, one of the best in the business. I feel like I say this a lot on this podcast, but it is. Executive producer and analyst, NFL Matchup, Greg Cosell. How you doing?
Hey, Lindsay, how are you?
Not too bad. We're going football heavy, and I really feel like the NFL doesn't have an offseason right now. OTAs, voluntary workouts, we've talked about it plenty of times on this podcast. The Bengals have had full attendance, and I'm going to jump right in, because plenty of talk this offseason was about who the Bengals were going to take at five. They go playmaker, Ja'Marr Chase, a reunion with Joe Burrow. Give me what you thought when they went Chase in the first round.
Well, I think I was in the minority because I agreed with that pick. I know a lot of people felt that they should have gone offensive line because it's very easy to say that Joe Burrow needs protection, particularly what happened last year. But I thought Ja'Marr Chase was special. And I'm not saying that I didn't like Penei Sewell, who obviously would have been the pick if they went offensive line. But I think that Sewell is a really good prospect. But I think Chase is one of those special wide receivers. And in today's game, where there's a lot more quick game, quick throws, three-step drop, five-step drop, Chase is dynamic with the ball in his hands. He caught a ton of slants in college, run after catch. I just think he's one of those receivers. I thought he was easily the best receiver prospect in this draft class. And I personally, and I guess they agreed, I personally would have taken Ja'Marr Chase myself.
I think in the NFL, it's a big comparison game. And I know you've talked a little bit about who you see, who he could be like in the NFL. Go ahead and tell the Bengals fans who you right now could see Ja'Marr Chase eventually being in the NFL as a wide receiver.
He's super competitive and he plays with an edge, which not all wide receivers do. I thought when I watched his tape, and just so people understand, I don't sit around after I watch a player for a half hour and try to think who he reminds me of. It either hits me or it doesn't hit me. If it doesn't hit me, I just move on. But while I was watching him, and I actually watched him last summer, because I did not know he would not play this year. And last summer, obviously, with the pandemic, you know, there was a lot of more free time. So I watched his tape last summer. He reminded me of Steve Smith in many ways, the former Carolina Panther, who just in the way in which he played, the competitiveness, the intensity, the desire. I thought that he was very similar in that regard. And the other player who kind of jumped into my head when I watched him was DeAndre Hopkins. They're about the same size. Hopkins may be a touch bigger. But Chase, I believe, came in at about 207, 208 at his pro day and, of course, ran exceptionally well. So I just thought he reminded me of those two players as I was watching his tape.
And part of what the Chase pick represented was an investment in the skill position guys and building that unit with the wide receiving core they have with Joe Mixon. Is it almost underrated, the depth that you need at the skill positions? And how do you feel like the Bengals have done in building that depth?
Well, I think when you look at their roster at the skill positions, other than tight end, they're lacking a tight end. They do not have really a receiving tight end. But I think when you look at when they go with three wide receivers, 11 personnel, one back, one tight end, three wide receivers, they're going to have Chase and Higgins on the outside. They're going to have Boyd in the slot. That's really good. And I thought Auden Tate, who actually did well when he got his opportunity. So he's still there as well. And then Mixon, the hope, of course, is that he can play all 17 games. He's struggled with some injuries, with some durability concerns. But I think Joe Mixon is a really, really good back. So I think when you look at the three wideouts, you look at the back, I think they're really well equipped at the skill positions. And, of course, Joe Burrow did exceptionally well last year before he got hurt. And there's no doubt in my mind he'll just continue to improve. So to me, this is an offense that can do well. I think when you look at their O-line, obviously that was a concern a year ago. You have Jonah Williams at left tackle. He's a little bit of an unknown quantity, but he was a high first-round pick. You got Riley Reiff at right tackle. He's solid. He's been in the league for quite some time. It's the interior where there would be questions that need to be answered at this point in time.
Zach Taylor had an interesting comment on Mixon in particular. He said part of the reason he wasn't on third downs last season was because, you know, you can't play him 75 snaps a game.
Right.
In an ideal world, how would you use Joe Mixon?
Well, that's a great question because to me, Mixon, one of the things I loved about him when he came out of Oklahoma is I thought he was a great receiver. They split him out a lot. They detached him from the formation. He ran wide receiver routes. He ran vertical routes. In some ways, he was used at Oklahoma in the same way that Alvin Kamara was used at Tennessee and is now used in the NFL. So, again, I can't speak to number of snaps, volume of snaps. Zach Taylor knows Joe Mixon obviously better than I do. So, but I think he's a really, really good receiver. If you guys know me, I never rip coaches. I would just love to see Mixon be more involved in the pass game because I think he has the ability to do that. And I think that would put a lot more pressure on defenses. But if there is a concern with snap volume, then, you know, that's, you know, maybe because they don't have Bernard anymore, who's a very, very good receiver. So I don't know. I don't know who's going to fill that role if it's not Mixon at this point, when you look at their roster and their depth chart.
I want to say with playmakers right now and go back to wide receivers, you have T. Higgins going into year two and Tyler Boyd out there. Obviously, the addition of Ja'Marr Chase. Where would you put this wide receiver group as a whole in the NFL?
Well, let's assume Ja'Marr Chase is a really good player. I mean, I'm not going to sit here and say he's going to catch 100 balls for 1,500 yards. Well, let's assume he steps in and is a very good player. I think this trio would be among the top five or six in the league when you really think about it. Higgins had a really good rookie season, and he was a player I really liked coming out of college. I know a lot of people were down on him after his pro day. That stuff doesn't concern me that much, you know, unless a guy runs a 4.8. But Higgins is a big receiver. He plays faster than his time speed. I really like him. Boyd's been a really good slot for a long time. That's what he is. He's probably overlooked because the Bengals have not been a good team, but I think Boyd is one of the better slot receivers in this league. And I think Chase, assuming he becomes what I believe he will be, I think this is a really, really good wide receiver trio.
When you look at Joe Burrow's rookie year, and I think the last time I talked to you was when they drafted Joe Burrow in the right. first round. Obviously, the only sample size is about 10 games. He didn't get to play his full rookie year. What were some of your takeaways from number nine out there?
Well, I think, Lindsay, you know, when you watch a quarterback in particular, if he plays in his first year in the same way in which he played in college, just in terms of poise, composure, comfort, that is a really good sign, because that means that the speed of the game is not overwhelming him. That means he's seeing things the right way. Because the body language tells you a lot when you watch a quarterback. You can tell when a quarterback is playing fast, when you play fast, what happens is it means you're not seeing things mentally in the way you should. So your body reacts too quickly because you're just not seeing it. So you're slow mentally leads to playing fast physically. That did not happen with Joe Burrow. Joe Burrow played slow mentally, and therefore his body was relaxed, and it was the same way in which he played in college. And to me, that was a really good sign. And you saw that right away. And believe me, you can see immediately when young quarterbacks are struggling with what they're seeing. They just, everything gets speeded up. That was not the case with Joe Burrow.
Part of the, I guess, the story of Joe Burrow's offseason, aside from the ACL recovery, he said, has been improving his ability on the deep ball and increasing the velocity of his passes. Just for a normal NFL quarterback, when they set out to accomplish a goal like that, how hard of a goal is that to accomplish?
Well, it's funny you say that, because I thought there have been some quarterbacks, some great ones in the league, Tom Brady, Drew Brees, whose arms got stronger as their careers progressed. I think Burrow is in that category. I know that Burrow works in the offseason with Jordan Palmer. And I actually spoke with Jordan Palmer, and he told me that Burrow's velocity has increased meaningfully. So do you have to have a gun to be a great quarterback in the NFL? No. But there's always throws in games where you've got to turn up the juice a little bit. Now, it depends on the game. It might be two throws in a game, might be eight throws in a game. But there's always throws where you need to feel comfortable driving the ball with some velocity. And if you don't feel comfortable doing that, you're not going to make those throws. And what happens then is you leave some throws on the field that you just don't feel comfortable making. So I think if Burrow's arm strength has improved, which I know it has, then he's going to feel more comfortable making tougher throws that are demanded in games, whether it's a play call on first and 10, whether it's third and nine, where you've got to drive the ball between defenders versus zone coverage. So, you know, it's funny you asked me that question, Charlie, because the only thing I thought that Burrow lacked coming out of LSU, because I thought he was a really high level prospect, the only thing I thought he lacked was arm strength to really drive the ball with velocity. Now, that did not really hinder my evaluation of him in a meaningful degree, but if he can improve in that area and make those tougher throws, then I think he'll be a really good quarterback.
And that might be especially important too, considering one of his best strengths as a rookie was his mobility, was his creativity outside the pocket. And now, while you assume he will get back to that level, maybe it's something he does less of coming off knee surgery.
Yeah, I mean, you know, that's another great question, which I've talked about with so many people this offseason, about what we call second reaction ability, the ability to make plays off script, outside the structure of the offense. coaches will tell you that you don't draft quarterbacks based on their ability to extend plays. You draft quarterbacks based on their ability to consistently and efficiently execute the offense. So the question becomes, is the ability to extend plays, has that now become a necessity, or is that still a luxury? You'll get many different answers. And believe me, I have. And that's the kind of stuff I think about because I'm nuts. I think about this stuff all the time. But he certainly can do that. You know, the question is, you don't want to do it unless it's absolutely necessary because you want to let the offense work. But he's certainly capable of moving around and extending plays.
The most important thing right now is protecting Joe Burrow going into 2021. All the criticism nationally, locally, you're going to hear it from fans. The offensive line, this team, this offseason, they add Riley Reiff at tackle. I think it's going to be a 1 year, right, maybe 2 years if they're lucky, solution at tackle. Jonah Williams is coming off an injury. They're working with Frank Pollock out there. Jackson Carman, they drafted right now. More than likely going to start at guard. You put Quentin Spain at left guard where he felt comfortable at with the Bengals on the offensive line. Where would you put this offensive line going into 2021? And do you feel like this team did
well? I think the question is on the interior, Lindsay. I think that, look, Jonah Williams was a high first round pick. You've got to expect that he will be able to perform. You have to. That's why you drafted him. So you put him out there and you see what he does. Riley Reiff, is he an all pro? Probably not, but he's played in this league for a lot of years and he's a solid tackle. So you feel pretty good about your tackle position. I think the big question ultimately becomes the interior of your O-line. How you feel, I mean, again, they have a lot of players on the interior and I don't know how this will shake out. You guys are there, so I don't know who's been working as the starters, but you know, they have Michael Jordan going into his third year. They have Trey Hopkins, who's been there a bit. They've got Quentin Spain, who's been around the league and started quite a number of games. They have Sua Fila, who's started a lot of games in this league, but he's been a journeyman. Carman was a player that I liked his tape a lot. Everybody gets caught up in whether a guy is a tackle or a guard. There's not many tackles that come out that have pristine traits. You know, there's not 50 Joe Thomases. So you have to decide when you look at a Jackson Carman, you know, what he is. And in fact, in my transition, when I evaluated him, I said that he no doubt will seen by some as an offensive guard at the next level, but I believe he can play tackle. Now, maybe he starts at guard because I think this team is probably looking right now to be shore up their guard position because Williams and Reiff will start at tackle. But I think Carman, over time, unless he gets a chance at guard and plays like an all-pro, but I think over time he could play tackle. And as you said, Lindsay, Riley Reiff could be a one-year deal, and then it could be Jackson Carman's position to lose at right tackle.
One last question for me, and it's probably a very important one. The Bengals have invested a ton in their secondary and a ton in their defensive line over the last two off seasons. Could you see this being a good defense, and what has to happen for that to be the case?
Well, I think the secondary is still a question. And it's a major question because obviously in this league, you need corners and you need a lot of corners. Now, I don't know. Again, I don't know who's going to start. I love the signing of Mike Hilton. I think Mike Hilton is one of the best slot corners in this league. He's a great blitzer. He's tough. He's physical. To me, he's a tempo setter on a defense. You play a lot of sub packages in this league. So Mike Hilton, to me, is a really good slot corner, and that's a really important position. I don't know who's going to start on the outside. They've got players here now. You've got Eli Apple there. You've got Trey Waynes. You've got Awuzie. You've got Darius Phillips, who's been there. I would bet, and you guys would know better than I being there, I don't know how that's going to shake out. I don't know who they see as the starters right now. But I think that is really, really important because in this league, if you can't defend the pass with your corners, you're going to have a tough time.
Greg Cassell, executive producer, analyst, NFL matchup. I can't thank you enough for talking a little football. I'm going to probably bug you right before regular season starts. You know it.
That's okay, Lindsay. I'm here. I'm here all the time, you know.
We really appreciate it. Where can fans find you?
Oh, well, you know, it's that time of year where it's funny. I'm actually sitting here and I'm going to be on vacation, but I'm not going anywhere. So I'll probably just be watching tape. So, you know, I don't really tweet a lot, but I'm at Greg Cosell on Twitter. So it's, you know, it's the off season. I do a whole bunch of radio shows and I always retweet whatever I do. But, you know, I know people say to me, you should tweet more, but, you know, I would just rather like sit and watch tape and spend my time trying to figure out what I want to say in 280 characters, you know.
Tape versus Twitter. That's probably a really good idea for you.
Yeah,
you
so I do the tape that. Instead. Yeah, I do the tape instead.
Well, thank you so much for joining us over on the Bengals Beat podcast.
Thanks, guys.